about? Are we just doing a summary tonight?
I believe it's the 10th class. I could be off my numbers. That's what my system told me.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that you have any lingering questions that you wish you had someone there to ask. And so really, they're running the class, Curtis. So, you know, if they have a question, great. If they have no questions, we'll hang up and go watch TV.
Oh, no. We would be very depressed.
We aren't letting you off the hook, Patty.
Well, you know, I do have a question because I'm bothered by something. I know you, in doing the research, I don't see anybody come up with an open D. You know, they have the loop, but the D is open. What does it mean when a person has an open D? Is it very much like the open A and O?
You mean the stem is normal, but the base of the D is open.
You got it.
I would think it would be an indication to look at the A and O.
Okay.
It's a very similar stroke, but it's not identical at all. So I wouldn't say it's exactly the same.
Okay.
Why is that bothering you? Do you see that a lot?
Yes. I see that in a lot of it because I do a lot of analyzing those that come in for apartments.
Uh-huh.
And I see that a lot. And I just wanted to know what it really meant.
Do they have an open A and open O at the same time?
No, the O's and A's aren't as – they don't have that. They just have the D that's open. But I thought maybe because maybe they just – because their O's would look like they – it's not a lying O. They just come in with the line, and but the O isn't – it's closed, but they just come in with a line on it. In other words, like as if they're starting in the center of the O and then going around. You know what I'm saying? So it's just – a line in the O, but their D's are open.
Why don't you fax it to me sometimes when you get one that's, and then I'll give you, be sure you put your phone number and your name.
All right.
I'll be happy to give you a call back when I get some time and we can discuss it. My fax number is 972.
Yes.
It's 644.
644.
5233.
972. 644.
5233. Sure, if you get something strange, then...
Okay, you know what? I didn't catch the last number. 5-2 what?
3-3.
I'm sorry, 3-3. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Just fax it to me, and I'll give you a call, and I'll give you my opinion sometimes.
Okay.
Free advice is worth about what you pay for it sometimes.
Yeah, because I really am intrigued by that, because I see that quite a bit.
Good.
With the D that's open there. So, well, why would a D be open? You know what I'm saying?
Well,
some of them have a loop, some of them don't.
There's probably dozens of traits that you could say, I wonder what that means.
Yeah.
And we may not have a specific meaning for it. It's the stroke is a stroke wherever you find it. So it would probably be similar to the A and the O. And
all
unless
right.
somebody's done a lot of research on it, I don't know that we're going to have something new and profound to tell you.
Okay, then I have another one for you. The S, it goes, when he makes an S, he makes the S so, and all his S's are like this. He makes it in the top and ends it in the lower zone. Much like it's not, you would normally think that if it was a capital S, it would be in the upper zone, you know, or start with a big S. But no, the bottom part of the S always lands up in the lower zone of the word.
Below the line of reality, is that what?
Right.
Sure. Anytime you get a line that goes down below the reality line, it's usually a determination. But the way you verify that is look for some of the other writings you see, and usually it will show up. But it will be determination if it goes down below. Anytime a line goes lower and longer than it normally does, that may be what that means. Bart,
okay.
You got an opinion on that?
I really, I would think anything goes below the baseline has something to do with determination.
Okay, even if it's an S.
Yeah, yeah, it's a straight line going down, you see.
All right. Okay.
You said a straight line going down? I thought she said S.
No, this is not right.
Well, it may not necessarily be straight. If it goes down below the line of reality, heads down, then it usually means determination, sure.
So, but if it's straight, though, it would be
stronger, you know, it's like the resentment stroke or something, yeah.
Okay.
The heavier it is, the more determined they are, you see. So you put strength on the length and the heaviness and, yeah.
Okay. Now a P. When they make the P, the base of the P goes, rather than make when they come up and do the P, the lower part of the P is like a V. Then they come up and they make the round circle for the P. But it's a V, an upside down V. I mean, it's a V, but it's in the lower part of the V. It's not in the upper part. So I couldn't say that it was,
Your manager.
Oh, my goodness. I forgot the word now.
Who wants to answer that? Someone goes, who has an answer?
Would that be aggressive if it's like a V down there, like a Q?
Well, I think that's argumentiveness, isn't it?
Yes, but I thought that was the upper portion that was argumentative.
Yeah,
I thought
yeah.
when they went up and made the V, like much like an H that comes up like an angle, I thought that was argumentative. I didn't know that the upside down ones were, too.
Argumentative is essentially stubbornness, but it's flipped upside down.
Yes. Okay.
That's what it is. So
right.
if you get this break in the P, that's what that is. The same shape as the stubbornness, but it's the opposite.
All right, this would be on the tail of the P. Do you can you understand what I'm saying? This
yeah.
is at the tail of the P. It's like that's exactly what it is. It's like a V at the tail
so
of the P.
It doesn't loop at the bottom. It just ends with a V.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a severe case of argumentativeness. And so remember the definition, the way you say that is that you would argue with a signpost and just verify it by asking the people what you think it is. And you say, do you like to argue, you see? And they'll tell you real quick, or their friends will, if they do not.
They'll just argue with you.
Yeah. Or they will answer with an argument. Oh, no, I don't do that.
Okay.
That's the way you learn, and if a stroke is a stroke is a stroke, so mm-hmm. when you see something that looks similar,
yes.
then you just verify by asking the people.
Okay.
And the reason we know that, and Dr. Walker told you, don't take my word, you know, just go out and check it out with all the people. And,
yeah.
You know, if 90% of the people agree with you, you know that you're on to something.
Yes.
And sometimes we don't say it right, and sometimes the people have self-deceit, and sometimes we don't communicate it properly, or they're just argumentative, you see.
Okay.
And so sometimes people deny it. If you re-explain it to them, you say, let me see if I can put it another way. And most of the times that people object to something that I say, once that we talk about it a minute, they say, oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, I am that way.
Oh, okay.
And so you just verify. Just check it out. It is research in action all the time.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we don't know all the answers. We've just learned a lot, and we use what we have, and we know it is accurate.
Right.
And there are things that we suggest to you or that we think, and that you don't always see it. So it's not 100% trait. But see, some of the other people have things that we don't even agree with in their books. But once you investigate it, you kind of figure out where they're coming from. And sometimes they may know more than we do. No, but if you can't verify it most of the time, then, you know, I don't want to use it.
All of my kids, and my kids are 30 years old and up, right? They all want to do this.
Great.
They're all, because they were so totally intrigued with the knowledge that I have developed from you guys, because I've done a lot of reading on it, and yet you're so accurate in everything you have taught me that my kids are totally, totally impressed with this.
Well, great.
And they encouraged me to really get into this deeply, which I am, but they were a big, big encouragement to me last week because of that.
Oh, good. It is fascinating.
Yeah.
It is. Buy them a deck of cards and just hand it to them and let them go.
Are.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they wanted to steal mine. I said, no.
Well, if you order more than one, Bart may consider giving you a discount.
Right. Yeah, that's what I want to do, because I've got friends that are interested in it, that want to get started in it, and, you know, plus my kids. And a lot of people are really, really...
Well, call Mary Ann, and she may work with you. Bart's out of town a lot.
Okay.
There's a website at e-onlinepublishing.com/wholesale.
Wait, E-dash what?
Onlinepublishing.com.
Publishing, P-U-B.
/wholesale, which is W-H-O-L-E-S-A-L-E.
Okay.
That site, you have wholesale prices, and you can order right there online.
All right.
So you can order by the dozen or half dozen or different books and stuff.
I have another question for you, now that I have you on the phone. You have to have every month you change the code to that to your site where you have that professional data thing. I don't even know what you call it. You know, I am so bad at words. Pathetic.
Grapho Web.
Yeah, the Grapho Web. You change that all the time?
We change it whenever we feel that someone might have been passing it around to someone that didn't pay for it.
Oh, okay.
And that's not every month, but if we do change it, we email a new password to you.
Oh, okay, because I never get it. Marianne gave it to me this last time, and because I wanted to just look into it. And Marianne had given it to me last time. Other than that, I didn't get it from her. You know what I mean? I didn't know if it was changed or...
Did you try it and it worked?
Not this past time. She just emailed me that, so I'm going to try it again.
Listen, I get most of my information from Marianne, so just keep in touch with her.
Yeah. If for anything doesn't work, you just call her and give her your student
okay.
name, and she'll get you hooked up with it.
All right.
Marianne is smart, talented, and beautiful. See, I got her picture today.
Oh.
Father Curtis, this is Judy from Atlanta again. This server I was doing over the weekend, I told him that he was not attentive to details, and he combated that with, well, my place is immaculate. And so I thought about what he said, and maybe you could explain it to me, but what I told him was, well, what I meant was, I think that you see the forest and not the trees. Is that more a better way of describing that?
I'm curious why you would tell someone they're not something.
I was, you know, he had the eye dots kind of placed way off in space, so I told him that he was not attentive to details.
I would probably never tell someone they're not something.
Mm-hmm.
That's like saying you're not sensitive or you're not expressive, because there's always times, if you take a hammer and hit me on the toe, I'm going to be real expressive at that moment, no matter what my handwriting
and
says.
And sensitive.
Yeah, that's right. So you need to rephrase that to what they are, what they are not.
Okay.
And in that case, without seeing the rest of the handwriting, again, if he has small handwriting but his eye dots are far away, it would be inaccurate to say that he's scattered. If he had bouncy, big handwriting and he had eye dots that were way away from the stem, it would be fair to say that he's very scattered. He gets lots of projects going and perhaps doesn't have time to focus on all the details. And at least you phrase it in a way that's more, here's how you are, not how you're not.
Yeah.
And I don't know, was he organized?
Did he have a need for perfection, maybe?
Hmm.
Did he have a straight line underneath his letters, you see?
I would say yes.
Yeah, so see, he has a need for perfection. He confused that with what you said about his attentive to details.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the other problem. Bart was very accurate in what he told you. If you say that you're not sensitive to criticism, perhaps, because he didn't have a large topped D, he may be very sensitive because some of the traits manifest themselves very similarly. And so they may have other things that you might describe with a similar word, you see. So don't, it is very, Dr. Walker taught us not to tell people what they're not.
Okay.
Just tell them what you see, not what you don't see.
Okay.
Because oftentimes you do not have enough writing to make that kind of evaluation of what they're not, see.
Okay.
So concentrate on what you see, and if you do that, and if you describe it the way you've been taught, then they think that you've been in their head or been in their house watching them, you see.
Okay, good advice.
Oh, good, yeah.
Hey, I've got a question about the tests for, I think, Bart.
Mm-hmm.
This is Deb in Spokane.
Hey, Deb.
And just as a general question, kind of looking at what you're looking for as far as some of your answers, a lot of people that give tests are looking for very, you know, rote answers, like right out of the book. And some of them, to me, seem a little bit more subjective. Are you looking more for opinion in some of them, just on some of the questions, or are they primarily all going to be right in the book?
Well, the ones that you answer written, most of them are from the book.
Right.
A lot of that's Dr. Walker's original test.
Right.
The ones that say not from text or the essay questions are just subjective.
More or less subjective.
Yeah, and the live exam is all subjective.
Okay.
I don't care if you can quote from the book. I don't care
right.
what year the first book was written. What I do care is that you can give me an accurate painting of the personality.
And my other question is, how do you grade these? Because it had said, I believe, at one point in the test that you demand 100%. So say if I get, you know, number 2 on test 12 wrong, does that mean that I don't get to get certified?
Yep, we give you your money back and you go home.
Seriously?
We want to make sure that you know all the answers to all the questions.
Okay.
And so if you don't know them, we go over them with you so you do know them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's been very few people that have failed if they read the book and if
right.
they listen to the tapes and if they take their oral.
Right.
Yeah, most people probably have 3 or 4 questions throughout all the tests that they either don't answer completely, and most of the time it's just they don't answer completely or the logic is off.
Or they misunderstood the question.
There's a number of questions that the proper answer is it depends.
Right.
It depends, and here's why it depends.
Yeah, that's what I meant by subjective. Like there's a few where you talked about the D, the big loop in the D, and if that can be what was the word you said? I think beneficial, if it's harmful or beneficial. And I think that would partially depend.
Right.
And I think it would be primarily a destructive trait, but that there'd be times when it could be actually beneficial depending on the situation.
You just need to explain it all,
right.
And then that is the right answer. Because I've had people that literally answer it both ways, but if they explain it properly, it's correct.
Right.
Because truthfully, if I have a question and it gives you 2 variables, you really don't know what the other 10 variables are.
Right.
And what we're looking for is what are those other variables.
Okay. That helps out a lot.
Yeah.
Question. What happens when you can't find, when you know a person has become, or rather is a pathological liar and it doesn't show in their handwriting?
Well, they're really good at it, aren't they?
Absolutely. I had to evict her.
And they have no guilt, you see. Remember we talked about traits that if it shows up in your handwriting, it's because it's connected to the brain. And if you have gotten rid of all the guilt, then it may not even show up.
So there's really not a way for you to know if the person is a felon or a pathological liar if, in fact, they don't have a conscience.
Well, it's not true. Their handwriting is going to show certain person. You're not going to see Mother Teresa write like the guy you just evicted.
Okay.
You're going to see somebody with lots of printing, lots of heavy handwriting. You're going to see a number of other things which would reveal either I don't know or I can't tell about their ethics or poor ethics. Ethics is a pretty hard thing to nail down. It's very complicated.
What did
they have? What handwriting traits did they have?
Well, they had the lower arc in the lower zone. They had the arc like they were. It was a female. She must have been molested by her father because it really showed that she was a severe arc in the Y and also in the I. But she was very. Her O's were closed like she was blunt. So I assumed that she was an honest person. Aside from the fact she had that problem in the lower zone, it seemed like her writing was all right, except for the sarcastic bars across the T, and it was in the middle, wasn't low, so she didn't have low self-esteem. She fooled me totally fooled me.
Well, I think we need to look at that one and see if there's something that you missed.
I would love to. I would love to email that to you and let you see that one, because that one we had to evict her.
Yeah. Well, Phyllis used to do screening for tenants before she died, and she had 100% ratio. Mm-hmm. If she said the person was going to pay their rent on time, they always did. What you've got is somebody with a lot of issues. The more issues people have, such as the sexual molestation and the stingers and the self-esteem thing, all those issues contribute to them having a dysfunctional life in general. So the problem is, if depending on the rent, I don't know, we have a lot of properties that are rather low income in certain areas of town. We don't have as much options for the perfect tenant in those arenas. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, if you're renting something for $3,000 a month, you also may not have as many options. People can't afford that.
Right.
But if you're in the middle range, you may be able to go with 10, 20 different people to find the right person.
Yeah, I am in the middle range. Mine is like, if you're talking about 2-bedroom for $750, $800, basically
yeah.
That's where I'm at. And they had to meet a certain criteria, and she did. But
I feel pretty certain I could look at the handwriting and let you know if they're going to be a decent tenant. But there's probably a whole bunch of people that are in that gray range.
Yes.
Where I'm not real sure. And that's when you lean on things like credit reports and referrals, and you call up the previous landlords, and you do the normal things.
Which all proved to be okay. She just, yeah. I don't know, she just fooled us.
Now, did she just not pay her rent, or she just
No, she went, she moved, she bought, she got it on the pretense of getting it for herself, turned out, and moved her sister in there with a bunch of kids,
mm-hmm.
and I got elderly people living there, a bunch of kids, and then they brought in some drugs and everything else, and she wasn't there. She just left the, got the apartment for her, for her, for her kid's sister instead.
Well, you may not talk about a case of somebody lying. You may, of someone that's bad, you may look at her and say, you know what, my crazy friggin' sister, I'll do whatever I can to get this bitch out of my house. And she did. She got out of her house, and she's not a drug addict, and she's not that way. There's a lot of extraneous circumstances that can make people do what they normally don't do.
Yeah.
You follow?
Yes, I do.
Again, you know, and again, she lied on the application, but she wasn't the one who did the drugs.
No, right.
So you know, there's a lot of situations. I mean, if we had a war breakout, every one of us would beat our family first.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. And we would lie and we would steal if we had to.
Right.
And maybe that's not true for everyone on the phone call, but for most of us it is.
Right. I know.
So I'm saying there are extraneous circumstances, but in general, I think you're going to find that you will be able to predict their behavior fairly well.
Well, see, this one you got to look at this one.
No?
I'll have to send this one to you because I save them all.
Well, the real test is when you find these exceptions.
Yes.
And those are the ones you learn from. So we need to keep that and look at it and find out what was wrong.
Yes.
Can I ask one more real quick question about the test?
Absolutely.
The ones that have asterisks on the questions, what does that
mean? It means it's
to?
Not found directly in the text.
Okay, so then that is something that either is on the tapes or you're looking for
or make
like
it up.
An essay response.
Like the question about what health problems are indicated in handwriting.
Right.
That's not really in the tape. They're really not. It's not in the text, but it was on the tape.
Yeah, Kurt talked about it.
Yeah,
we talked
also on these tapes.
And then, like, the question of how will being sensitive to criticism affect someone that has frankness in writing? And
right.
Are you looking for us to kind of explore that a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Cool.
Yeah, I want you to tell me how those traits stack together.
What about the question, the definition of graphologist compared to graphoanalyst? Was that in the book as well?
It was not in the book.
Okay.
Did we answer that last week, or did we get cut off?
Well, I thought you said... Think
that
about it and do it next weekend. So.
Yeah.
Bottom line is, here's the story. I'll give you the rundown. And Curtis, are you still on the phone?
Yeah.
Maybe you can give me the version that Dr. Walker used to tell us. Apparently, Milton Bunker, I don't know if Walker knew Milton Bunker or it was a hearsay situation. But
no, he knew Dr. Bunker.
He knew Dr. Bunker. So back in 1950, Bunker did what I did. He published a book by himself. But he didn't do what I did is he basically – couldn't make his ends meet. So he basically borrowed a bunch of money from this guy named Cuesta, I forget his first name, and he put the books as collateral. Well, he never paid back the loan. So Milton Bunker lost all the rights to his own books because he couldn't pay back the loan. This was 1953, 1954. And if you go in the libraries, those original books called, you know, Graphoanalysis or, you know, Handwriting Something by Milton Bunker, that's his original books. He also had either the same books or some more advanced books that he had written over the years. And so the same Cuesta guy, they basically got together and he took those books, chopped them up into small chapters, and charged $2,000 or $3,000 for the certification course.
Wow.
And that school became International Graphoanalysis Society, which is a company. It's a privately held corporation in the city of Chicago, in the state of Illinois. It's not a society. It's not a membership organization. It's not a .org. It's a company. And they have the trademark called graphoanalysis. They got it trademarked back in the 50s when everyone thought hearing analysis was a cult. So they basically said that we've got a scientific approach, which is different than graphology, which is basically true because most of the graphology books now and back then no, not now. Now they usually integrate both of them now. You know, the Idiot's Guide, that integrates a little bit of both of them. But back in the 70s, 80s, they're all pure graphology. So it really is a different system. So they got that trademarked as if it was something new and different. Well, it wasn't anything new and different. It's just that the, you know, trademark office took their money and they gave them a trademark. So to this day, you can't use the word graphoanalysis unless you have the authority of that company.
Oh, wow.
Now, they say that you're members, and that as long as you're a member, you can use it. The truth is you're not a member. As soon as you sign up for their course, your customer, you get permission to use that until they tell you you don't have permission to use it anymore. And most people, Phyllis never got kicked down, but she almost quit a few times. If you were to take a course by me, if they were to find a book of mine on your bookshelf, they'd then kick you out of the club.
Okay.
But it's not really a club. It's just a company, but they call them members. And, you know, it's just it's a huge system to keep them from learning and teaching. So none of their members, including Phyllis, never wrote a book because she was afraid that they would sue her because, you know, they're very aggressive about that. Because really, since they're not teaching anything new, it's a great system to make people think that they're the only dispenser of this information.
That's awful.
Anyway, so they're basically kind of a bunch of assholes, and I would rather not cross them because even though they don't have money to sue you because they're not very wealthy anymore, they will send you a nasty letter if they see that on your website or something.
My.
Oh, wow.
So then technically there's no real difference at all other than the fact that the Grapho analyst is membership only.
Yeah, they'll tell you that if you're not trained by them, you don't know the information. But Curtis and I have taught you everything that they teach because Dr. Walker learned it from Bunker and two other schools.
Well, people on the street aren't going to know the difference.
They don't know and don't care.
No, the Grapho analysis word is really not a marketable term. No one knows it.
They probably don't know the difference between that and geologist.
They really don't. And so it's really irrelevant.
It doesn't make any difference. Let me give you another example. Just as I ran an ad one time, and I have a degree in psychology, and I put down psychologist. Well, I promptly got a call from the local member of the Texas Psychological Association because I'm not a psychologist if I'm not a licensed psychologist in Texas. I don't join the organization, you see.
Oh, boy.
So anyhow, it doesn't make any difference. You're an analyst, and people recognize because you're very descriptive. You're a handwriting analyst, and that's all you need.
By the way, my opinions on IGS are not loosely based. I've met with them face-to-face. Mm-hmm. I tried to interact with business with them. Dr. Orr used to work with them. Phyllis told me every year she wanted to leave because they were such jerks. They do things like if you sign up for their course, which used to be $4,000 and now it's roughly equivalent to the cost of my course, which I find that very surprising. I wonder what could happen there.
They sell about as many in a year as Bart does in half a month, I guess.
Yeah, they do. They really have maybe one or two new members a year. In 1973, their Congress or their annual meeting was about 400 graduates. Quite an accomplishment. And before Phyllis died back in 1995, she went to one and they had less than 20 graduates.
Wow.
Really, it just spiraled downhill because their only marketing is referral word of mouth. And Phyllis, for example, if she were to refer a customer, kind of like if you refer one to me, they would give you 30% of the revenue as it came in because it was a payment plan. And the courses were $3,000, so it was a payment plan. If you don't pay off your payment plan, they will aggressively send you nasty collection notices. And we've had a number of customers who've wanted to join our course, but they still owed them money even though they didn't want to be part of the organization anymore. Secondly, if in Phyllis's case, or someone else like Phyllis, if they sell 30 or 40 courses over a couple of years, you're getting payments every month as the customers pay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they kick you in the organization, they keep all your money. They keep all your commissions. And so what they did routinely, they'd kick people out of the organization for about 3 months, and they would let you back in, but all your commissions would disappear. They did that over and over again to a lot of people.
Nice.
Ruth Holmes. You talk about all the really great analysts around the country. They used to have taken Ruth Holmes and Erica Crows. They've all had some association with them and decided they're jerks, so they quit. And they started their own.
So Ruth Holmes is not good or good?
She's fabulous.
Oh, okay.
Ruth Holmes is one of the best in the country.
Okay.
She's the one that was on the Kevorkian trial, the hiring jury.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I think she was one of the books that I had read from the library.
I don't know if Ruth Holmes has any books.
Oh, she does? Maybe I'm wrong then. I could be wrong.
There is a Holmes, but I'm not. Ruth Holmes is out of Michigan. She's one of these people that's a working handwriting expert. She works so much, she doesn't have time to write a book.
Okay.
But she does speak at conferences, and she's a very, very woman filled with integrity and just very, very sharp.
Does she have a webpage?
I don't know. I don't know. If you search for Ruth Holmes in Michigan, you'll find.
Yeah, I'm going to look. Yeah.
Go to google.com.
You know why what you're saying really intrigues me? What you were saying about that, because it just so happens last year before I started your course, There was one night writing analysis at the Bristol Community College here in Fall River, Mass. So I went. It turned out that she was a graduate from that school from Chicago you were just mentioning, Bob.
Well, she's probably fairly competent. I mean, they do good competent trainings. It's the administration which has taken them from 200 graduates to 20.
Well, what bothers me is when she had mentioned the way I had to get my certification, because they have a group here, handwriting analysis group in Massachusetts, that say you have to get certified by the state of Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
okay? And that was what I had to go, was to go through that school. That's what they said.
If you went to the school in Chicago, they would let you get certified in Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's basically what she was more or
well,
less...
Well, that's really works out real well for people who own the company in Chicago, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm not going that route. You know, I'm going to just do it the way I'm doing it with you. But because I figured, like you said, it didn't matter. Once I got myself known and got out there, what does it matter? I don't have to be certified by the state.
Of course not.
No.
All the state's competency, they certify whether you pay a fee or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what's that all about?
About people trying to control you?
Yeah, my fear is if I get out and I get publicized, they're going to try to come after me and say, well, you know what, you should be certified by the state of Massachusetts.
Who's they?
Being that group that she mentioned when I went to that course that night.
And tell them to kiss your ass. You know what they're going to do? They're going to do nothing.
No, right? They can't do anything, right?
Well,
I don't know what
we've never had anybody do anything to us.
Right.
No. And I've been on more TV than anybody combined.
Yeah, I know.
You know, all they are is jealous because you're on TV and they're not. You know, most of those people have full-time jobs doing other things because they don't know how to make a living.
Yeah.
Hey, what is the average amount of time that you've found that your graduates take to get a business off the ground and actually pay their bills?
I honestly don't answer that. It's like any business. It completely is variable on the person's ability to run a business and have initiative. It's not the handling skill. People, when they get certified, have the skill. It's the ability to actually create leads and to convert those leads into cash.
Market it.
And it takes, you know, in any direct mail, if you send out 100 letters, you're going to get 1-2% response if it's a good offer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not getting your message in front of 100 people a day, whether internet, mail, speech, radio interview, you're not going to get one sale a day.
Right.
And people don't think of it that way. They go, I'm going to do one speech every month, and I'm going to have a full-time business.
Mm-mm.
Right.
That can work that way. Mm-hmm. Phyllis did speeches at least once or twice a week. She did a workshop every fourth weekend, maybe.
Wow.
One in Malibu, one in Colorado. She did document examining. That stuff combined made her about $70,000 a year, all through from the 70s and 80s.
And you mentioned that that Kurt might possibly be teaching a course on the document examination.
I'm actually was talking to a lady named Catherine Kopenheimer today. We're actually putting together a course where Kurt's not going to teach it. We're using someone who's written a course.
Okay.
She's the president of National Association of Document Examiners.
Wow.
And we're going to market it for her.
Oh,
so we're going to have an annual conference, probably here in Dallas, with me and Curtis and Kathleen. You know, all the different document examiners that we've experienced with, we'll put together some panels, and then you'll do her home study course.
Oh, that's great.
It's already prepared, but we will supervise and monitor it and help you learn.
Oh, I really want to know that.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal course, and it's not a little course. Like this little course, which most people on the phone have almost finished, it's probably taken you 30 hours of work, perhaps. Is that about right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more, depending
Give
on the tapes themselves are 16 hours, so you figure you've listened to them twice and studied and stuff, plus the phone call. This home study course is about 160 hours.
Wow, okay.
And there's 72... handwriting samples that you have to get right to figure out who the author is. If it's from,
right.
And each one of those could take you 4 hours. So literally, I mean, it's a lot of work. It could take you 6 months to a year, almost 2 years.
But when you go to court, you have your credentials.
Oh,
that is nice.
Yeah, if you want to learn how to be really great at it and not get caught off guard, this is a great course. I think the course is going to run about $2,900. There'll be financing. But if you think about compared to a college degree, it's a bargain because when you get finished, you'll have it. Curtis will teach you how to handle any attorney, no matter what a jerk he is. I'm serious. I mean, that's different roles.
Good.
And then, of course, you'll have some marketing tips as well. But it's that being a document examiner is money in the bank. Because if you'd get on the Yellow Pages and call every attorney in the book and send them a card with a handwritten note, believe me, you'll get business. Because they're always getting needs.
I'm going to Chicago next week to testify in a case. I got a call from Dr. Irwin, email today. I guess I emailed him back over the weekend and told him I'd be happy to come to California whenever his trial is set up. A year and a half ago, I worked up his profile and gave him a document letter, and now the case is coming to trial. He wanted to know if I'd be available to come out. So I did one in Erie, Pennsylvania last year. I did one in Florida this year. So you see, oftentimes if we had people certified in those areas, it would be great to pay you a few $100s rather than fly me up and then pay me a day's wage.
Wow, yeah.
But we don't have any referrals. The guy in Chicago, it's actually a minor case. I'm sure that whatever he wins probably won't make him as much money as he's going to end up paying me.
But
he wants me to come, and I'm happy to take his money. I charge him a half a day plus his flight up, so I'll make $400. I've already made it $300 to do his document letter, and then he'll have to pay a couple fly me up, you see.
Wow.
So anyhow, I'd be happy to, just hand it to somebody in Chicago and say, go, here's my workup, and just go down and testify you're an expert and tell them that, we worked on this together, and here's the answer.
Yeah, I personally don't enjoy the examining as much as Curtis does. I have found that for me, the speaking and personality are more of my style.
Right.
To do the document examining, you really have to be very meticulous. You have to enjoy working with microscopes and numbers and photographs and blowing up pictures and things, and it's really interesting. And you have to be sort of a sleuth.
Wow.
So it's
like
an interesting business, and it works hand in hand with handwriting because you're going to get people assuming that you're either one or both.
Yeah, most people don't seem to know the difference.
No, they don't.
A lot of people ask me, "Oh, well, do you do fraud cases?" And I say,
"Oh, sure. You send it to me, and we'll split the fees." You see?
Really?
Sure. You don't have to be an expert yet to be able to participate in the profits.
But as far as testifying in court,
you'd have to have me. But see, I did 15 cases in January, and I don't even think I went to court at all. Most of them are just certified opinion letters, professional expert opinion letters, where they pay me and then they negotiate a settlement, most cases, you see. And oftentimes they don't intend to go to court. One guy's getting a divorce and his wife signed his name to some paperwork. He wanted it simply to negotiate it. Actually, he didn't intend to use it.
Wow.
But he wanted her back, and now he didn't want her back, so he may end up using it anyhow. So I don't, who knows?
Really? So I could technically advertise that and then work out something.
You could advertise it, document examination. You wouldn't have to be able to advertise you're an expert witness yet.
Yeah,
you can find
somebody in the area to do a joint. I mean, most people's businesses, the most challenging thing is new business. So if you work on a deal with anyone to refer them business, they'll give you a percentage.
Right.
That's just a common arrangement. I mean, we have an affiliate program with all of our products. If you have a website and you link through, you guys can get 25% of everything we sell.
Right.
But you've got to link to the website so it tracks it. If you call Marianne and say, here's the customer, her name's so-and-so, then we'll make sure you get the commission. But again, it's hard to track that sort of thing. But I mean, if you refer business, that's the way everybody that loves to make money giving you that. That's how salesmen make money.
I've never been involved with websites, but I was just told today it costs quite a bit of money to get a website.
Oh, you can get them pretty inexpensively. It just depends on what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
My husband, the engineer, does these, and he's designing one for me. But it's going to be fairly limited to start off with because I'm not up to the speed where I'll be taking credit cards yet. So we're just going to start with a very basic, deal, and then as I expand, I'll expand what I have on the webpage.
Yeah, if you guys are interested in building a website, there's a shopping cart system that's about $50 a month, and it's the best in the world. You can read about it at onlinesalesmachine.com.
Online sales
machine.
Machine.com. I-N-E.
/
/
shopping cart.
Shopping.
You can get them really cheap. I mean, I'm only paying 10 a month for mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What about the setting of it up?
It's very basic, but it is a .com, and I have my business name.
Well, I would want that for...
I have an email account that goes with it, with my .com on it.
Yeah, if you go to...
But it's very, very basic. It doesn't come with, you know, any real... So I can't take money through that site yet. It's
if you go to a company called GoDaddy.com...
Yeah. That's a good one.
What did she?
They'll register your name for $10 or $15.
Yeah.
What did you just say? Dough?
GoDaddy.
GoDaddy.
Mhm.
GoDaddy. DDY. DADDY.
Mhm.
Okay.
But here's the thing: if you're going to be in business, you need to have a website, and you need to submit it to Yahoo, and you need to submit it to the search engines, so that people can find you.
Yeah.
If they type handwriting expert Dallas, they're going to get Curtis's website. In fact, if you type document examining on any search engine, you're going to get his website because it's listed in the top 10.
Hey, what do you think about liability insurance? Out of curiosity, just in the event that someone, where people as sue happy as they are these days.
Easier way to do that is just put your business into an LLC, which is limited liability corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Make it a separate corporation,
right,
and don't put any of your assets in it.
So it's not a sole proprietorship.
Yeah, don't do sole proprietorship, especially if you're married, because now your husband's assets are
oh, I know,
vulnerable.
It's now his.
So yeah, make it an LLC, and then that gives you time, because if you get sued, then you've got time to move stuff around if it was their problem.
LLC.
Yeah. Oh, I do trust. Everything I own is in a trust.
So that's not a flat-out corporation.
No, it's not. Trust is not a corporation. I have only one corporation because I don't like to have to report to the state, and I don't like them having the tax numbers and tracking my business.
There's all kinds of ways to do it. Just remember, if you don't have anything, they're not going to sue you. So if you've got an LLC with no assets,
right,
that's protected from all your personal assets, it's unlikely they're going to sue you. And I don't know any handwriting experts have been sued for any reason relating to what this is. This is a very non-liability type of business.
Yeah, but you know how it is these days.
Well, I have yet to be sued for that, and neither has Curtis, neither has Phyllis. So,
but don't keep your assets in your name. Put it in trust.
Yeah,
so you guys should read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or, my new book on wealth also goes into it, but the trick to...
Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, by Robert. Yeah.
Have you read Bart's book? Bart's book is excellent.
It's got
a lot about
tips on wealth. Yeah, the idea is you want to manage things and not own anything. And if you own things, you own them through corporation. And if you get income, you get it through corporation. Or there's just lots of ways to pay yourself first and government last. That's why most people never get wealthy, is they pay the government 30% before they have time to invest it.
Yeah.
You know, and as long as you're in a real job, you may have to suffer through that, but there are ways around it.
What kind of requirement is there to getting the LLC?
State filing fee, it's the same price as a corporation.
Really?
It's a different form of corporation.
I know in our state they have certain limitations to who can incorporate. That's why I was curious.
Just get it done in Nevada, or Nevada is a great state to incorporate.
So it doesn't even have to be in the state you're in?
No, of course not.
Well, that's interesting.
And
Nevada.
Then in Nevada, they also do not release the board of directors to the IRS.
Oh, my, that's really interesting.
So they have no idea who owns the corporation or actually runs it.
Hmm.
But you can have a LLC in Nevada with as many as two members.
Huh.
You and your mother, for example, you know.
And they just operate well in
that
regard.
And if you spend all the money, then you disperse the profits of zero to each member, and you don't file any taxes.
That's very interesting.
Now, if you make money and you don't spend your but most of you will spend a lot of your money on your rent and your phones and your clothes and these things that are tax deductible the first year.
Oh, yeah, they all become business expenses.
Yep. I mean, you should have a business whether you intend to make any money or not, because you could write it off.
Yeah.
For 2 years.
For as long as it takes.
Oh. I thought there was a limitation on that.
There's not a limitation on how long you can lose money.
Curtis,
if you lose money 6 years in a row, you probably will be out of business, so there shouldn't be much of a problem with it.
Hmm. Some good advice.
Yeah.
What else you guys want to know? We're so full of advice tonight.
Oh, no. Go back over to the test and look at some questions.
Now, Marianne wanted to have her test with Curtis because she's afraid of me.
Oh, really? Oh, baby.
Is that right, Marianne?
No comment.
She's not. Is she there?
Yeah, Marianne's on. She doesn't miss a thing. See, she's
a sweetheart.
I'm not that difficult. I just make sure you know your stuff.
Yeah. Oh, here is one. I had trouble with a question on number 15, test 15, question 2. What two traits tell us that we are closing all but one person out of our life?
And what's your answer?
Well, I had like the clannishness trait as part of it, but I wasn't sure about the other one. It said two traits.
Two traits?
And I wasn't sure because clannishness, I thought it was like just one or two people. I didn't think it was down to like one person.
Clannishness is usually one.
Is it?
Yeah. What will be another one as far as closing people off?
The small lower loops, the closing off of the lower loops.
Yeah, I think a retraced loop or a very tiny loop would be one or two people. Yeah.
Antisocial.
Yeah. A jealousy loop.
Oh, that's a little tiny little circle on the top
it's
of the...
basically a clannish loop up top.
Oh, that's...
Now, that's not technically... It doesn't sound exactly what they're asking for, but that would also close them off.
You know, it would. That's really true. I hadn't even made that connection. That's a great connection.
What are you saying? That the jealousy loop shows a sign of closing people off?
Yeah, clannishness up top.
Mm-hmm.
Same stroke, really. But it means that they have excessive attachment to one person. Therefore, they have excessive fear of losing that one person.
Oh, my word.
Interesting. Interesting.
And it's not down low, it's up top, so it's a cerebral problem, which we translate into jealousy or issues, you know.
Oh, wow.
Usually, almost anybody, take this relationships, of all the fights that you've had where someone's saying that your behavior is not appropriate, usually it's based on a fear. They have a fear, and in order to protect themselves, they're going to tell you what you can and can't do.
Yeah.
And they're going to use guilt or anger to try and persuade you to their way of thinking.
Yes.
If they had no fear of you leaving, no fear of being criticized, no fear of looking stupid, no fear of, you know, legitimate, like fear of worrying, let's say your kid doesn't come home till, you know, 2 in the morning, there's a fear there. In order to protect themselves, people make rules.
Right.
So the less fear people have, the easier they are to get along with. The more fear they have, the more they have to make rules, which the more bitchier they get, and the more it's hard to get along with people.
Wow.
That is interesting.
Fundamental reality of human beings is if the more fear they have, the more rules they make, and the more they kind of try and control the outside world, which is you. Which is why people with perfect, pretty handwriting have more fears than those with bouncy baselines.
That's really true.
E+ writers have more fears because they're more emotional.
Yeah.
DE writers. I heard somebody refer to a strong DE slant as a needy person. Extreme neediness, they called it. I wondered about that.
I think an E+ person, you could safely say that.
But DE.
You know, they are definitely need emotional feedback.
Yeah.
And they have to be with people. So if somebody that doesn't really like people, that would be a good definition because they're always wanting to take energy from them. E+ writers are energy vampires.
Yeah.
Especially if they don't have large handwriting.
So that would be interesting. Oh, yeah. So small writing with a sharp E+ slant.
Yeah. Now, obviously, if you've got very tiny, narrow loops, they may not be that needy. But if a decent-sized lower loop, they're going to be needy.
Yeah. Whoop.
Yeah, are you going to do this again? Are you going to have this class like this again?
We will probably have another one when another one fills up in the fall. But I think it'll probably be less than 10 weeks. It'll probably be they can listen to all these tapes and they'll have, you know, every fourth week they'll get to chat with me or something.
Yeah. Well, then we've been lucky.
Well, you guys were the first ones. The first ones that respond to things get more attention.
I really liked the way this worked out. I think it was extremely helpful.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, the only criticism we've ever had on our courses is they don't have enough personal attention.
Yeah.
Which I think is very valid.
Yeah.
And the solution to that is to raise the price to $1,000 in every course. Well, that's not a good solution because we'd have a lot fewer students.
Yeah.
So this is a nice compromise where you get to ask the questions. We don't have to prepare a lecture every time because we've already prepared.
Right.
And you guys get to answer questions. There's not email support for every question. You know, again, we have to raise the price significantly. But I have yet to see Marianne refuse to answer a question if somebody called her or emailed her.
Right.
You know, so there is the ability.
Don't forget her next Christmas, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you guys all buy her something, then I don't have to, and that would be great.
Call us, fax us, let us know if we can help you.
My company Christmas cards, I'll have to be sure and send you guys some.
All right, good. Thank you.
Anybody have any questions? We have about 2 minutes
left.
The
only thing I want to ask you is you would be able to review, like when I make my cards out and I do all that, you would review the cards and everything?
The business cards?
Yes.
Yeah, you have coupons in your marketing course and your basic course for time.
Okay.
And so if you know, you've got at least an hour of my time, and if you fax it to us and set an appointment, Marianne will set you an appointment.
All right.
Then we will get you reviewed.
Okay. Wow.
Most
I'm saving that
till
I have my plan all set up.
Well, I want you to know something. I am very proud of you and very proud of being associated with this that I brag about to everybody. So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and I've really enjoyed the ability to have the one-on-one.
I have too.
Definitely added to the course.
Well, you know, it's amazing with 20 or so people, there's only like 7 or 8 that are always here. And those are the people that are really, will really be successful because you find more and more questions.